Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Could we get some non-spoilery superhero music?
That's my sound effect for today.
There it goes.
Shazam.
There it goes. That's our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. I am Ben Bolin, our Shazammer here, our oorah, our hooray, Mr. Noel Brown. Noel,
just
how you doing?
Nonsense talk. I just make sounds with my mouth. They pay me for it for some reason.
You doing well, though?
I am doing well, and I've got to say that I don't want to spoil, no spoilers to your point, but I had no idea that Shazam stood for something, that it's a freaking acronym. How cool is that? You know how much we love acronyms.
Everything's an acronym if you're weird enough.
If you give it value, yeah, for sure. What are we talking about today, Ben? Shazam? What are we shazamming?
I'm so glad you asked, because for a long time, like many filthy casual fans of comics and comic lore, okay. I thought
filthy casual. I love that.
Isn't that a gamer term?
I've never heard it before. Yeah. But it sounds like a
Max is nodding.
Yeah. Max knows filthy. Let's call it maybe. This is sort of like being a fair weather fan, like sort of like you're not really in the weeds with this stuff. You're not a day one, or you only know the movies, that kind of thing.
Bandwagon.
Bandwagon, fair weather, filthy casual, call me what you wish. Fellow ridiculous historians, for quite some time, I thought that Shazam was the name of the character. This is untrue. Shazam is the secret magic word shouted out by the character Captain Marvel.
Yeah, but also the movies, the character is named Shazam, with the kid that turns into the guy who shouts the word, and also the name of the magical wizard who imbues him with all of these. Okay, the point being, Ben, all of this stuff gets real convoluted. This is like a IP juggling competition that we're going to talk about today that is a lot longer than a lot of people might realize.
How many Captain Marvels are there, Noel?
No idea. And I've researched this stuff. I mean, I guess what, like four? I don't even know. Let's just get right into it.
All right. Yeah, you're right. So back in March 2019, with the help of our research associate, Jeff, we got in a bit of a conversational pickle. Shazam, the film about Captain Marvel, and Captain Marvel, the other film about another Captain Marvel, were in theaters at the same time through two different companies. They are unrelated. They do not exist in the same universe. And they are indeed a consequence, a result, a culmination of a history as you said, know a legally fraught history that goes back almost a century.
Okay. Yeah, that's the number I was looking for. And IP, of course, most folks know this, but in case you don't, intellectual property. And that can get really fraught when, you know, something all of a sudden starts to pop off and get really popular. And oh, dear, that surely resembles my cartoon character that I created. Maybe it's time to hire some lawyers and just see about that. F around and find out, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, they effed around and they might find out that they are, in fact, in a situation known as copyright infringement.
Right. Shazam, indeed. So, funny thing happens at the comic stores in June of 1938. You find a thing called Action Comics number one. Action Comics number
one. Kind of worth a lot of money, right? Yeah. Valuable piece. Yeah.
To the fellow enthusiast, you might recognize this as the print debut of DC Comics Superman. He comes out in June of 1938, and just a year after, in Wiz Comics number two. I think they made it in 1939, but it comes out in February 1940. Wiz Comics number two features a guy named Captain Marvel, original name Captain Thunder. He is absolutely, as though we are in a court. Can we get, like, Max, can we get like a Casey on the Case, Law and Order comic court?
Dun. Oh, it's surely in the folder somewhere.
There
right?
It is. There it is. So, Your Honor, Captain Marvel, originally Captain Thunder, is nothing like Superman other than the fact that he looks exactly like Superman and has identical powers and a slightly different outfit.
Guys, we're going to get to this, but I have to posit right up front. I sometimes think people get a little high on their creative horse, maybe giving themselves more creative credit than they deserve. All of these characters are just modeled after Greek gods, man. It's like, an individual imbued with super strength who can fly? Never heard of that before. Never read the, you know, Greek mythology Hermes pantheon. Man. 1,000,000%, dude. And that even comes in with the whole what the acronym Shazam means, which we're going to save and get to in just a minute. But I just wanted to put that out there right now. I think a lot of this is a little bit of a pissing contest, and we do see where the law ultimately sides. But none of these ideas are particularly unique. You know, a magical individual who can fly and lift heavy things.
Joseph Campbell is nodding in agreement from beyond the grave, the author of Hero with a Thousand Faces. No one has accused human storytelling technology of originality. So let's learn a little bit about our buddy Captain Marvel, nee Captain Thunder. Comes out through an outfit called Fawcett Comics, again, publication 1940. And Captain Marvel has a cool thing that's very appealing to the demographic of Fawcett Comics. He is a 12-year-old boy named Billy Batson. He's an orphan, and in his origin story, he follows a stranger into the subway. And when he goes to the subway, he meets a mysterious old man, a wizard named Shazam. That's the actual, it's like Frankenstein's monster.
1,000,000%.
You know? Yeah.
Shazam. Yeah, and no exclamation mark, though, in his official title.
Right. So this wizard is like, stuff is messed up, young Billy Batson, and you are the only hope for all these crazy high stakes that I will not explain.
Why him? Just because he happened to be the one that followed him, or does he have some mystical destiny?
He's like, you're reading the comic and you're thinking, oh, I could do
that.
That's me. I should follow more strangers into the subway.
That is not the takeaway.
That's apparently, that's the implication. So the wizard imbues, and I love that word, imbues or imbrues, young orphan Billy with this power. Whenever he says the word, the magic word, the wizard's name, Shazam, then he acquires, can we get some like MCU or DCU music?
Whatever you pick, Matt, Max is certainly going to go along with exactly what we're doing.
And let's round robin this.
Oh, please.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so what does Shazam stand for?
The wisdom of Solomon. The strength of Hercules.
The stamina of Atlas.
The power of Zeus.
Lightning strike.
The courage of Achilles.
And the speed of Mercury. Do you get it?
I get it. I guess it's good that he didn't have the fatal flaw of Achilles.
Right.
Right.
He has his own heels, as we'll find.
Right.
He also let's point out that there were a couple of Greco-Roman gods that were ignored in this.
Shored in there. Yeah.
He doesn't have like the bad attitude of Hades. You know what I mean? He doesn't have the limp of Vulcan, or Hephaestus. Captain Marvel, for a time, surpasses Superman in popularity. It's a real Pepsi versus Coca-Cola thing, and DC reads this. They do not exist in a vacuum. And you can tell, as our old pal, research associate Jeff points out, you can tell because Superman's powers evolve all of a sudden, inexplicably, right after Captain Marvel hits the scene.
Absolutely. DC changed their hero to kind of go with what it seemed like the kids were getting down with. Before Captain Marvel, we know the famous line that really does stick with it to this day, the property, Superman could leap tall buildings in a single bound. But that speed of Mercury, man, it's got some heat to it. So the idea that Superman was only propelling himself over tall buildings with some powerful gams, with a strong leap, but not necessarily the power of flight, because the speed of Mercury granted Captain Marvel the ability to fly. So before you knew it, Superman was up there too, taking to the skies. And it's funny, I've always thought of that expression, leap tall buildings in a single bound, and in my mind, I just squashed it together with flight. But that's not what the original Superman did.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a really good jumper, strong jumper.
And now it's an incredible Hulk power, right? Hulk can't
that's
fly,
right.
But he can leap so well. It's almost
and smash.
Also, just want to jump in here. The buildings weren't as tall back then.
That's true.
They were actually really tall. I think
they're pretty tall. Max,
that reminds me of the first time I saw the Tower of London, and I thought, dang, I guess anything over three stories really was a skyscraper back then.
Mm-hmm. And you know, some of them had the little needle on top or the antenna, which just added a little bit of height.
To jump in here, actually, I remember when my aunt Jennifer lived in Philadelphia. There was a law or a rule or a custom, I don't know which one it was, that no building could be higher than the hat of William Penn.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. There was a similar thing, I think, for a while in DC and in a couple of other cities around the world. Like DC is a very large, picturesque metropolis. But that you're not going to see a ton of skyscrapers. You're going to see one weird looking phallic object, obviously, the Washington Monument. Why is it an obelisk? Story for another day.
Indeed. But I'm sorry, Max. Taller than the gentleman's hat?
William
Penn. I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I probably should explain that. There's a statue of William Penn on top of
something.
Ah, thank
you. Okay, thank
you. A big statue of him.
A big one, yeah.
And, you know, it's William Penn. He had a larger-than-life.
Yeah, held a bit of sway in that neck of the woods. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a burst of humility, they call it Pennsylvania. So there are other key differences between the early Captain Marvel and the early predecessor Superman. Captain Marvel franchises so quickly. All of a sudden, you got a whole, dare I say, Justice League of Marvels, a Marvel family. There's Captain Marvel Jr. There's Mary Marvel. There's a super cool old man. There's Talkie Tawny, who is a tiger.
Yeah.
Who can talk, get it? And there's like there's like a superpowered rabbit or hare, uh-huh, if you're in Europe. Captain Marvel bunny. And everybody loves these stories. Speaking of franchises, speaking of, as you raised the point earlier, Noel, speaking of IP or intellectual property and derivatives thereof, there is a 12-part film series of Captain Marvel. There's a radio show. There's all sorts of swag. A young up-and-coming, allegedly Melungeon entertainer named Elvis Presley out of Tennessee is very into Captain Marvel Jr. And
talking about yourself, right?
No. My hip action is a little bit nastier, but
you're talking about old Elvis, right?
Yeah, Elvis Presley is said to have borrowed his look from not Clark Kent, but Captain Marvel Jr.
Mm-hmm. And that whole clean cut, mild mannered vibe also comes into question once we get into the legal battle of all of this. And it is interesting, too, because it does seem like, you know, while we might think of Superman as the most iconic kind of OG superhero, it does seem like Captain Marvel got some things right quicker. The idea of a super crew, you know, like a superhero kind of squad. It seems like they were right out of the gate with that. And it would be a bit longer, I believe, before, like, the Justice League came around.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Just so. Justice so. Whatever. Keep it. Give me a...
It's yours.
Yeah.
I want it. I'll take it.
All right. So by the mid-1940s, the original Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Shazam, as we call him today, by far the most popular comic book superhero in the country, most popular comic book character in general. Sorry, Popeye, Yellow
Betty
Kid, Betty Boop, Tarzan. Right. Superman basically comes in a year or two before and gives birth to what we would call the superhero genre today, launching the halcyon days of the golden age of comics. And Superman is following up, you know, Pepsi and Coke again with Captain Marvel. Superman gets his own radio show. He's in comic strips. He gets a cartoon. He gets a TV series. But he doesn't get one thing that Captain Marvel gets, which is the movie business.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and it, you know, this is like the early days of movies, but it's certainly an early era of this type of franchising, right?
Mm-hmm. Captain Marvel reaches the film industry first to date. Fellow Ridiculous historians, Captain Marvel is the first superhero ever to be adapted, to have their story adapted into a motion picture. And, you know, now that I'm thinking of it, Noel, Max, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of that poor kid in the TLC days, Honey Boo Boo. Remember that? Remember Honey Boo Boo?
Oh, I thought you meant like TLC, the R&B group. No, talking about the Learning Channel that eventually just became the amorphous TLC. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course, Honey Boo Boo. And what was her mom's name? Mama June? Mama June.
I think that's how they went. Like, Alana Thompson is the name of the former child star, and people started calling her Honey Boo Boo because of her catchphrase.
Right.
That was like her Shazam. And Captain Marvel became known as Shazam. Anyway, side note.
So the studio behind the film was called Republic Pictures. They were originally actually working with DC, which at the time was called National Comics Publications, to make a Superman picture. But they already had an existing cartoon deal with Paramount, which prevented them from signing another type of property like that at the time. So Republic goes with Captain Marvel instead, and DC was understandably pissed. And Fawcett Comics had already published Masterman, which was in and of itself an even more egregious. I don't know. I don't really fall on another side in terms of whether or not Captain Marvel was an utter ripoff of Superman. Sometimes there's parallel thinking. Maybe there was a little bit of ripping off going on, but Masterman, definitely obvious one-to-one clone. Masterman also doesn't really roll off the tongue very well.
It's like, give me my, I like the alliteration, but it's like, give me my weird Havana cigar and let me kick my feet up at the comic book spot and be like, oh, there's Superman. He's eating our lunch. What's another word for super? Uber? It's too German. Call him Masterman, Overman.
Master's not great either. I'm picturing like a southern gentleman in like a white suit with his feet up, drinking a mint julep, watching the field hands at work, you know?
Masterman sounds, all right, the overseer vibe. I feel you. Masterman sounds like, in the early 1700s, it was an obscure crime. Possibly
true.
A crime that William Penn would have prosecuted or been found guilty of, right?
Absolutely.
I love how we're all sort of nodding with that one. So, yeah, agreed. Masterman is an even more obvious copy of Superman, and DC threatens a lawsuit. They send, like, their version of what we would call a C&D, a cease and desist. Fawcett just says, okay, you got us, and they pull it. But they're keeping with Captain Marvel, and DC is still really beefed up about it. They're saying Captain Marvel, again, is just another guy who came after the guy that we made up.
Isn't it interesting, though, how this really does start to feel almost like a superhero arms race?
Yeah, I was thinking of that word in the research as well. Like, it is people attempting to come up with the end all be all, like, quintessential superhero and stealing ideas from each other left and right. I mean, in June of 1941, National Comics sues Fawcett Comics for copyright infringement, and this creates one of the longest running legal battles in the history of comic books. It lasts over a decade, and National Comics is, by the way, think of them as like the representative of DC Comics, and they're saying, look, we came up with this a year before you guys did, and then you came up with a guy who looks exactly the same.
Oh, 100%. By the way, in case you're trying to picture the word faucet and you're picturing a tap dripping water, it's actually spelled like Farrah Fawcett. Yeah, F-A-W-C-E-T-T. So as you said, Ben, longest running legal battle in the history of comic books, at least. Why don't we start with a little breakdown of kind of how it started and how it's going?
For sure. Yeah, Fawcett, like Farrah, says, all right, we get it, Your Honor. These, I'm twiddling an invisible cigar this whole time. All right, we get it, Yana. These two characters are very similar, but it's not to the point of infringement. I mean, think about Popeye. Think about Tarzan. They already do all sorts of, you know, kind of superpower stuff. So who really is to blame? And then National Comics, or, you know, DC's representatives, they come in and they go, "Objection, Your Honor. Here we have a binder.
We got a binder.
What's in the binder?"
Well, this is kind of where it does start to, you know, I can see the issue where you start to have these page by page comparisons of different comics, over 150 pages, in fact, panels from their comics of Superman juxtaposed with panels from Captain Marvel, with close details kind of like circled, like Exhibit A, everything from costumes, from the various, you know, accoutrements like capes and boots, the various superpowers, of course, flying abilities, strength, speed, bullet invincibility, the ability to withstand explosions and shells and stuff like that. The detail of a secret identity. And they also, and I think I mentioned this briefly at the top, they also went so far as to say that there was some copyright infringement going on in the fact that they were both clean cut, clean shaven individuals.
Yeah, no facial hair. That's a bummer for Max, Noel, and myself, folks. No superheroes with facial hair. Also, I love invincibility to bullets. Not necessarily invincibility overall. You just can't shoot at them.
That's right. And I guess I haven't seen the panels or the side-by-side comparison, but even some of these things, just on paper, not entirely unique. I think there are examples of this stuff. I mean, when you just modernize like a hero, of course, bullets are going to come into play because that's what all the baddies use, the gangsters. But when they start circling things like costume similarities and very specific like copycat items from one comic issue to another, with enough of those stacked up, got a pretty good case on their hands, I would argue.
Yeah, and the court agreed. Went to trial 1948. The judge primarily ruled in favor of our friends over at DC and said, okay, this Captain Marvel guy is an infringement on Superman. And a lot of this comes to us courtesy of our friends at plagiarismtoday.com who
great
go into
site.
Detail on it. Yeah.
And we're going to be really careful to cite them every chance lest they come after us.
Yeah. Those so let's also,
hawks over there.
Yeah. Let's also shout out Jonathan Bailey. And this is a pretty recent article. It comes from May 29th, 2019, talking about the larger tale of Captain Marvel. And don't worry, we'll get to your favorite Marvels, your modern Marvels, dare I say, in a moment. But obviously, the courts have to agree on the infringement here. It is kind of obvious because who reads comic books at this time? People who make comic books.
We have not yet reached the kind of mainstreaming of comics that we know today, you know, where mining every single piece of intellectual property from these canons, you know, this back catalog of stuff to make, you know, a movie or television show or whatever.
Yeah, it's still coming from that that newspaper comic strip origin, right? The idea of a whole book of funny pages. That's why they're called comic books. Right. So the issue is there's the comic book issue is there is this Halcyon era again, wherein it is kind of mainstreamed in print. But during the post-World War II in the early 1950s, the sales of these superhero comic books, they're in the can. They're slumping. People are not making as much money. And so Fawcett decides, hey, we can't really fight this case, right? We're already hemorrhaging money in sales. So they pay $400,000 in damages. If we could inflation calculate.
And a boop.
A boop. And a boop.
That's about $4 million today. And so.
Certainly not chump change.
Not chump change, but Captain Marvel may have gone out like a chump. Fawcett Comics shutters their whole comic book division and they bow out. This has intergenerational copyright consequences. But this is not the end of Captain Marvel.
Meanwhile, actually not meanwhile, it takes a little time. Fast forward, in fact, to 1966, Captain Marvel has largely become a dead property. It wasn't until February of 1966 that the pulp magazine magnate Myron Fass, which is, if there ever were a name that, felt right for a pulp magazine magnate, Myron Fass has my vote. And Myron Fass publishes Captain Marvel, which is considered by many in comic book circles, as history circles, to be one of the worst, if not the worst, comic books ever written, which, you know, makes sense if you're thinking about what pulp magazines were famous for putting out. It was crap a lot of times,
and,
right?
And our research associate Jeff is co-signing that, but folks, that comes from Britannica. The Encyclopedia Britannica is telling us that Myron Fass's Captain Marvel is one of the worst.
I'm wondering, I'm assuming that Myron Fass had maybe acquired this intellectual property after the decline or the, you know, disintegration of Fawcett Comics. I don't have that detail right here, but that would be the only thing that would make sense.
Right. That would be logical. And this Captain Marvel is released around the same time Marvel Comics is riding high. They've got Fantastic Four. They've got Spider-Man. They've got X-Men. As you know, if you follow superhero films and adaptations, folks, Spider-Man and X-Men are making a lot of money. Fantastic Four is also on the way in the next few years.
Interestingly enough, though, if I'm not mistaken, both Spider-Man and X-Men are similarly kind of like there's a weird disconnect mm-hmm. between like two studios that have
it's
the
like
rights
Fox,
to
Fox, Sony.
Well, they're
and right.
merged
now.
Together. Well, so Fox doesn't have them anymore. It's
not anymore.
It's Disney. Disney bought out that entire right. part of that studio and got all that stuff. That's when Disney bought out 20th Century Fox.
Shout out. Kevin Feige, the architect, the mad genius of the MCU.
But, he also, but like the Sony Spider-Man movies are largely considered to be pretty bad until the Spider-Verse movies, the animated right. ones, which are, I think, regarded as some of the best Spider-Man films ever to be made. And I would tend to agree
and
with that.
The new ones with Tom Holland, there's weird things. Those are so right, many products. Right.
There's
in
a
the
there's
Disney
a partnership
universe.
With Marvel, and right. there are certain characters they're not allowed to use or not allowed to cross feature because the whole deal yeah. with the cinematic universe stuff is to have appearances and a continuity. So those are properties that tend to be a little confusing and convoluted. And I think those deals are going to run out, and then ultimately it all goes to
let
Disney.
Let me tell you guys what happened.
Money.
Let me tell you guys what happened. So please. Marvel goes bankrupt. Marvel as a comic book entity is in the tank, and in their darker days, they start selling off properties, their derivative IP, you could call it, to different companies. And hence you have for a while 20th Century Fox owning X-Men, and then a different company, Sony, owns Spider-Man. It was a fire sale. I don't even know if we want to do a Ben with Facts thing on this. It's an unpleasant story and explains a lot of the weird attempts that we see these different companies doing, you know, with the Sony Spider-Man or Spider-Verse, right? They're trying to make a Venom-verse where Spider-Man doesn't show up. They're trying to make a Morbius film. Where
ooh, that one didn't go super well.
Are you kidding?
Morpheus. No, it was Morbius. That's the vampire one with Jared Leto that yeah. was apparently, I mean, I saw it on a plane actually, but I just sort of tuned out because it was embarrassingly bad. And now there's this new Madam Web movie that is apparently absolute garbage.
Mm-hmm. The comic books were good, but I don't know if the creators read the comics.
But is Madam Web an official Marvel release, or is there another weird crossover gimmick? Because it seemed of a lower quality than the typical. I know Marvel Studios seems to be struggling a little bit, but Madam Web looked like a B B movie kind of. I don't know.
It's Sony. And
it is Sony. There you go. Okay.
So it's still in the Spider-Verse because Madame Web in the comics is affiliated sort of with the pantheon of Spider-Man. And so they've got this whole legal quagmire going on. And our pal Myron.
Myron.
Myron Fast.
He loves his mother, that Myron. I'll tell you.
He's got to get out of Skid Row, right? Shout out to Little Shop of Horrors. It seems.
Oh, you're right.
It seems obvious that he is trying to claim this trademark. And it's kind of like, in a weird way, it's like a print version of those B movies that you would see straight to VHS in the days of Blockbuster, right? Mm-hmm. Remember those, the not quite the same horror film? It wouldn't be like Hellraiser. It would be like Heck Ruckus.
Hellbringer.
Yeah, right.
Heck, yeah. Well, and then, you know, there was a company called The Something. Oh, geez.
I know what you're talking about. Now. Yeah.
But they coined the term Mockbuster.
Mockbuster. That's it. Yeah.
Like straight to video things where literally part of their business would be people confusing their thing for the real thing on the shelves at Blockbuster.
That's what Myron's trying to do.
The Asylum, I think is what it was called. I want to say it was called The Asylum, but instead of snakes on a plane, they did snakes on a train. But
you taught me this one. Yeah.
They were leaning into that. And this whole deal is pre that, but this is exactly right, Ben. The absolute B movie version of a popular thing.
He did such a he got in trouble because he also got too close to the actual properties and characters. He used Plastic Man, which is a real DC character.
And a real ripoff of Mr. Fantastic, or vice versa.
Hey,
I'm not even sure what order they came in.
Hey, Law and Order. Dun.
But, just saying, man.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Sustained. Dr. Fate. And then how bad is this? He had a Batman character and he was like, well, we can't call it Batman. We'll call him the Bat.
Yeah.
Perfect crime.
Can we also, once again, no shade, this is all first to market stuff. You can only come up with Batman one time. It's not the most creative thing in the universe. It's a guy who looks like a bat and he's called Batman.
Well,
I mean,
Spider-Man has Man Bat. Oh, wait.
100%
DC has
the Man Bat. Wait. But then there was the Man Bat in the Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah. I think
who was
Man
the like
Bat
weird
DC.
Mutant. Bat thing. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
And there's Batgirl. Oh,
sorry. Gosh. You can see how this stuff is even confusing for us. And we're fans of this stuff. So it really does get pretty convoluted pretty quick. Mm-hmm.
And so he has his own Captain Marvel that he makes a side. This guy has a like a Batman Robin relationship in the Myron Fast stuff. And Myron Fass's Captain Marvel has a sidekick named Billy Baxton with an X, which
is supposed to Batson, right?
Pretty close to Billy Batson. So you can see how that didn't work out. After just a few issues, Fass's Captain Marvel disappears, and Marvel Comics has this look around the room moment, and they say, wow, these low quality imitators, these grifters, they can do lasting damage to everything that we represent. We have to go back to court. We have to lock down this Captain Marvel name. And so in, I think it's like 1966, the publisher of Marvel goes to Myron Fast and says, look, we'll give you $6,000 to the rights for Captain Marvel.
Okay. Again, we don't even have to inflation calculate it. You could probably figure that was probably closer to like, you know, $50,000 or maybe even $100,000 at the time. But when you think about where things ended up with all the movies and how even minor characters like that were big, have become big money.
Shout out Ant-Man.
Exactly. So the minorest of characters. That was probably a little bit of a sweetheart deal there. You know?
Yeah. And so it's so weird because Marvel, so Myron Fast turns him down. Marvel goes ahead and says, forgiveness v. permission. We're going to introduce our own Captain Marvel, a brand new Captain Marvel. And in 1967, I want to say, they come out with Captain Marvel on the 12th issue of a thing they were running called Marvel Superheroes. And Myron Fast says, Marvel, gosh darn it, I'll sue your pants off for infringing on my trademark that I stole from you. And they say, you're being a cartoon. And so Myron Fast ultimately settles for $4,500. And we've got a great quote here. Noel, I know you'd love to do this one. He says,
Our Captain Marvel was selling lousy anyway. I mean, really, the only way to say that is like, it was lousy. It was selling lousy. Who cares? Get rid of it.
For everyone,
throw it on the trash heap.
For everyone listening along at home, our pal Noel is also twiddling a fake cigar at this point.
And I said,
that's how publishers talk, right?
It's true.
They always have like a fake cigar.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Not much happens for the next 20 years. The original Captain Marvel is no longer publishing. The name and the character, more specifically, stopped being used in 1968. That's where we get the current Captain Marvel. So this new Captain Marvel is an alien. They make up a whole backstory, build out a world for Captain Marvel's race. Captain Marvel, who is not the current iteration played by Brie Larson, is a dude, alien, from a race called the Kree, or a species called the Kree.
Which you might recognize from the Guardians of the Galaxy films. And again, you know, I think, like, you yourself, Ben, I have friends who are deep into all of this stuff and all of this lore and these various iterations, and the Kree have been around for, you know, decades and decades. And, you know, really what Marvel Studios have done is mined all of this intellectual property, sometimes taking some creative liberties, sometimes being very true to the source material, but it's essentially just an absolute, you know, pool of stuff they can pull from to kind of like tell these stories. And the Kree are a big part of that, as well as like introducing Thanos and stuff like that.
They got creative. Give me that drum. Yeah. All right. So this this direct predecessor of the current Marvel Captain Marvel is Mar-Vell. And his and this was an editorial necessity. They needed to use the trademark, which is kind of also why low-key Sony comes out with a Spider-Man movie every so often, because they have to use it to keep it. So Mar-Vell is kind of checking the boxes for Marvel. I mean, he looks a lot like he has this like a lot of the same superpowers. He gets a different uniform. He has gold wristbands, which you'll later see in stuff like Captain Quantum and whatever in Marvel. He's got a Starburst logo. He has a different sound effect when he strikes his wrist together. He doesn't say Shazam, but what triggers his superpowers is the sound effect
Katang, which is really just kind of like onomatopoeia for the sound that it might make when the wrist, you know, braces are slapped together.
Katang, yeah, because the Billy Batson in this is a teenager named Rick Jones who finds these golden wristbands, the Negabands.
The Negabands?
Negabands, yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
It's not great.
Oh, sorry, because they're from the negative zone.
They're from the negative zone.
Got it.
Yeah. So the lore is there. They put it in place, but I would prefer a Shazam to a Katang. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Absolutely. And the whole negative zone, it all seems a little bit lazy, if we're being honest.
If
right?
we're being honest. The fans didn't really dig this, and the sales reflected that. So Captain Marvel in this iteration was always sort of on the cusp of being canceled. And this is where we get to the actual Captain Marvel that you may know and recognize from the Disney run MCU today. Carol Danvers makes her first appearance in Marvel Superheroes, issue 13, just after issue 12, right? In March of 1968. And she originally is hanging out with these alien Kree. She's hanging out with Mar-Vell.
Yeah, she actually gets abducted by a jealous Kree officer named Yon-Rogg, which sounds weirdly Cthulhu-esque.
It does.
And Mar-Vell flies in to rescue her in, like you said, Captain Marvel at number 18. Then there's a battle between Mar-Vell and Yon-Rogg. And during said battle, a device is exploded, an ancient Kree device called the Psyche Magnetron, which is kind of cool sounding. I like that. I might use that for, I don't know, it could be a cool band name or something. And it explodes and creates sort of like a fallout area wherein Mar-Vell and Danvers get bathed in this radiation. Mar-Vell presumably is being okay, being sort of, you know, extra human and all of that. And Danvers, however, transforms. She's infused with Kree DNA, and she actually gets powers very similar to those of Mar-Vell.
Dare we call her Captain Marvel? Not quite yet, because for almost a decade, Danvers is just a second-tier recurring presence in the overall Captain Marvel series. It isn't until the 1970s when DC has Wonder Woman coming to like the cover of Miss Magazine that the folks at Marvel look around and they say, twiddling the invisible cigar.
Indeed.
Hey, why don't we have a woman superhero?
Women's lib is hot right now. We got this second wave feminism. We need to get with it. Get with the picture.
J. Jonah Jameson banging the desk, Bring me a woman superhero.
Any woman, as quick as you can. And then, you know, you can kind of see through the ploy here as well, even by the name they plopped on her as Ms. Marvel. You know, it's like throwing a bow on Pac-Man and calling him Miss Pac-Man, but even more kind of obnoxious, frankly.
Yeah, and so in January of 1977, Nola's right, folks, Miss Marvel debuts, and now our character Carol Danvers has a Farrah Fawcett hairdo. Get it? Easter egg.
Mm-hmm. Oh, snap.
Yeah, and she's traveling to New York City. She's going to work as a journalist for a magazine called Woman.
Woman.
Super Jeez. Creative. Yeah. It's published by J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah. And who's all about, you know, women's lib.
Yeah, classic.
Big time. So, you know, Ms. Marvel does never really quite lock into a rhythm, whether it be with the stories or the art, because that's very important to kind of establish, like, sort of a cohesive feel to it. A rotating cast of artists means that it never really quite gets into that groove. A new costume that gets unveiled in 1978, but overall, it's a bit of a dud, and yeah. It gets canceled just a few issues later in issue number 23, April of 1979. But then they decide to bring back Ms. Marvel. While she doesn't get her own imprint or her own series, they throw her on a team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Avengers. The moment where Marvel Comics said, we have Justice League at home. It's true. Justice League comes before the Avengers. But
I think her inclusion is a little bit offensive, though. Or she's tough. Sort of this token woman that is treated a little bit disrespectful.
There's a storyline where she gets sexually assaulted. It just, in short, it doesn't age well. But the writers, like artists and writers like Chris Claremont said, hey, we're not treating this character well. This character has a lot of potential and depth. And so in October of 1981, Claremont himself tries to fix this. And he says, all right, Carol Danvers has made her way back from space to Earth. She's escaping the Kree, but she's haunted by it. She runs into Rogue, the very southern mutant from the X-Men who can steal powers. And
also will kill you, right? Just by the touch of her hands. Too long.
Yeah. Yeah. And so.
See, I didn't realize Rogue was ever not connected with the X-Men. I really only knew her. And I am one of those. What did you call it? Filthy. I'm filthy in some way. Filthy fans. Well, Fairweather is what I'll call myself. I really only knew about a lot of this stuff from like the X-Men animated series or like Batman the animated series. Those were really excellent, by the way. And there's this new X-Men.
X-Men 97. Kind of,
yeah, it's supposed to be fabulous. And I really can't wait to watch it. They really nailed the style. And apparently it's very, very smart. I'm excited to check it out. But no, I had no idea that Rogue was her own thing.
Oh, well, Rogue was formerly from the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, helmed by Magneto, and then she joins the X-Men. So she's a bit of an anti-hero, but she has this complicated relationship that actually passes the Bechdel test.
Cool.
with Carol Danvers. And so the reason Rogue has powers that are
because it's two women talking to each other.
Right, without talking about a dude. Right.
Exactly.
So she gets her powers, super strength of flight and all that, because she is permanently intertwined with Carol Danvers as Miss Marvel. And when Rogue and Danvers get into this situation, Danvers loses all of her memory, which is sort of Chris Claremont wiping the slate clean, tabula rasa. And so then he has Claremont writes Danvers or Miss Marvel as a character who is recuperating and discovering herself and her identity with the X-Men. It's a great thing, right? And Claremont does very well with the X-Men series. His run goes almost 20 years. But it's Captain Marvel still. They want to hold on to Captain Marvel. How do we Shazam this back to its original success? Maybe we fast forward to the movies, right? Where's my... Oh, well, now instead of publishing magnates with print, Noel, we've got to twiddle our vapes. Now we're studio magnates.
Studio magnates indeed. And as we've talked about throughout this episode, the MCU is feeling like it's in a bit of a slump, but it is still quite big business. And when it first really came out, the original runs of MCU films from the Iron Man franchise and on to the, you know, Avengers and Infinity Wars and Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, this is some very creative use of this intellectual property. Very well made. It's neat to see them pulling in some smaller directors to come in and do these really, really big films. And, you know, you've got James Gunn, for example, who got his start with Trauma Pictures and Toxic Avengers and all of that, helming the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, I think, to great effect, because there is, with the legacy of these properties, a lot of pulpy, fun kind of trash involved. So he's the guy that kind of gets that. And that's why I think his are more successful than maybe some of the others. And it feels like they've gotten to a place where they sort of just lost the plot. And it is neat that James Gunn, I believe, now is revamping DC, who have notoriously been a little more dour in their films, like with the Batman's films with Christopher Nolan, which are obviously very good, but there's not quite as much fun and lightheartedness as you might find in some of the Marvel movies. So interesting to see where that's going to go. But that being said, Marvel Cinematic Universe did grow into one of the most successful film franchises of all time, and hence the mining of every inch of intellectual property they can from back as far as the 1940s.
Yeah. This is where Carol Danvers / Miss Marvel / Captain Marvel goes to the big screen. Everybody twiddle your vapes. Brie Larson, the actor, is cast in the title role of Captain Marvel after the role gets teased in Avengers Infinity War. So March 2019, Captain Marvel comes out. It makes more than $1 billion U.S. worldwide. And then later that same year, Avengers Endgame comes out. We also get the introduction of other ancillary characters, just like Shazam, just like Captain Marvel of old. There's Monica Rambeau, who is affiliated with Captain Marvel and has similar powers, right? And then because we have promoted Danvers to Captain Marvel, there's a new Miss Marvel. And this is a Pakistani-American teenager, Kamala Khan. Her powers are way different in the comics versus in the film or the series adaptations. It's pretty interesting because what we're seeing is overall the adaptation of these modern myths. I really appreciate the idea that you pointed out of this continuity between Greco-Roman gods of old and deities and pantheons, and the way that those stories echo down to the world of comics and entertainment today. It seems that, as our pal Jeff said, it's a reminder that with superheroes, no death is truly final. You might be exactly. You might be the next Captain Marvel, Max.
You never know. It also, I would have to argue, does seem to lower the stakes quite a lot. And I would argue is maybe one of the reasons why some of the Marvel properties have lost their luster a little bit. Because if you don't really have to worry about what happens to a character, because you know they're just going to bring them back through a multiversal timey-wimey flip, then Are there ever any stakes, really? It just kind of feels a little bit, lazy in their ability to continuously cash in on all these characters without actually having to commit to any of their decisions.
Interesting.
Just saying.
Is that how you feel about Doctor Who? Because you said timey-wimey.
I said timey-wimey just because it's, you know, it does seem to be a narrative device, and it's a little vague as to how it actually works. And I feel like the mechanics behind it are a little, you know, amorphous. And I also feel like it's just, again, like, is it really, is a character ever really gone if they can bring him back, you know, in the next movie? It just seems to me to be a little bit of a, I don't know, cash grabby kind of move. I do think it can be used creatively. Obviously, with stuff like Everything Everywhere All at Once, this time travel stuff and multiverse stuff is really, really cool. And obviously, the directors of that film and writers, the Daniels, are now in a deal with, I believe, the Russo brothers and some of the bigger studios. Hopefully, they're not going to get relegated to just making superhero movies. I don't think they will. I don't think they would allow themselves to be used that way. But I do think it's a technique that can be used well, but also it feels like Marvel's kind of done it to death a little bit at this point.
What about James Bond?
I guess I feel like that's a little different just because the continuity doesn't matter quite as much. And it feels like every time they cast a new Bond, they reset the clock. And,
oh, you know, like with Spider-Man.
Yeah, a little bit. I guess
but then all the Spider-Men's meet also.
That was fun. I did enjoy that. That's
been spoiled so much that I don't think it should be.
No, it's fine.
They put in the ads.
Do you guys hear what I'm saying, though? It feels like if there's never really anything to worry about because you know they can just come back, does it feel like there's a little bit of lowering of the stakes and you're not really concerned with what might happen? I don't know. Maybe I'm being a...
Yes, I agree 100%, Noel.
And we cannot thank you enough for tuning in, folks. We hope, fellow comic book nerds, we hope you are nodding along as we're hitting some of this stuff. Now, obviously, we alighted over some of the more in-the-weeds part of this evolution, but I think what we can all agree on here is that a story never really ends. With that, we can't wait for you to tune in next week. We have so many more explorations ahead. History continues to be ridiculous. Big thanks to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams, and our own Lex Luthor, Jonathan Strickland.
Indeed. Alex Williams, who composed our theme, research associate extraordinaire Jeff Bartlett. And of course you, Ben.
And with you as well.
We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.